Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen Eltrogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of the Happy Rant Podcast with myself, Stephen Eltrogi, and my co-hosts, Barnabas Piper and Ted Kluck. Guys, we've got something special coming up in just a minute, a very special guest who I couldn't personally be more excited. He's a bit of a mentor, a father figure to me. But before we do that, let's talk about our sponsor. We got a new sponsor, and Barnabas, my phone is actually not – I took it out of the case this week. Bold move.
That bold or foolish, depending on what perspective.
Well,
you're
I have a new confidence to take it out of the case because of this new sponsor. So you want to spell out the details?
That's true. It does sort of deflate the foolishness of that. I have replaced probably five telephones over the last 3 years between myself and my wife. Most of those were hers, and it's very expensive to do that, even if you have insurance from a carrier. So. That's why we are very excited to have Lemon Street Mobile sponsoring the podcast. You can go to lemstreet.com. Let me tell you a little bit about the business. It's not just a company. I talked to the owner-operator, a guy named Brian Swank. He's a really good guy. They're based out of Pennsylvania.
Is that really his last name, Swank?
Yes. So it's kind of like being Brian Swag, except not quite as cool. So Brian Swank, the lifestyle that you love to live, Stephen.
It is.
Also, the lifestyle that you're now living now that you're rolling in dough from your new business endeavors.
Literally rolling around in it.
Because you read the book Mega by Chaz Murray.
I did.
And father figure and all that.
Yep.
So Brian runs this business himself. It's a local business that he is taking national, and he's doing a fantastic job. The cool thing about it is he's very experienced in phone repair and everything. But he uses this as an opportunity to connect with members of his community. When I talked to him on the phone, he was just coming from a house call where he went in to fix somebody's phone and had a chance to share the gospel with them, have a good conversation about their life. So he's doing really cool stuff through a business endeavor. But let me tell you about the business piece of it, because that's really what our listeners will benefit from, since they won't probably get a house call from Brian, since he only does that locally. So they offer protection plans for phones, and it's normally $5 a month. So that's about half the price that you pay through AT&T or Verizon. And it's a $69 deductible if something was to happen to your phone and you need to have it repaired. That is less than half the price. So I have paid the $200 deductible multiple times to fix phones, and it stinks. So $69 is something I will definitely be taking advantage of. In fact, I might just throw my phone right now for that opportunity.
Plus, you get to deal with a real person, not like a mega corporation where you're filling out eight forms. And
yep.
I'm a big fan of dealing with small companies where you get right to the person. I'm a big fan of that.
Brian is running this business while his wife is still in school. I mean, it's his business, so he's going to keep doing it. But they're living a real life. You're supporting a real person. So the deal that they are offering to podcast listeners is a 10% discount on the protection plan, the deductible, if you use Happy Rant as a discount code at checkout. So Happy Rant is a discount code. That's at lemstreet.com. The other
how do you spell that? Just for the
Lem word. Is L yeah L E M as in Mary or Marriott. Mm. So lemstreet.com. Pretty straightforward.
Happy Rant.
You'll get a 10% increase in value on any trade-in that you do. So they do offer trade-in services as well. So whatever quote you would get on the phone, they will offer 10% more using that same Happy Rant checkout code. So that's Lemon Street Mobile, lemstreet.com. Happy Rant is the discount code at checkout. Protection plan, $5 a month, $69 deductible. And you'll get a 10% discount on that and a 10% increase in trade-in value. Pretty sweet deal for a small business run by a great guy. So check that out.
Ted, given that you're still using – aren't you still on the iPhone 4 original, something like that?
Yeah, I'm on the iPhone 4. I'm looking at it right now.
I was going to say, this is an opportunity to upgrade for you. Get the new 6S.
Dude, yeah, so what would that look like for me?
I have no idea. You're going to have to go to lemstreetmobile.com.
Well, you could just drop your phone and then see if there's a trade-in option. Okay. The other thing is, this is not one of those protection plans where there's loopholes where they're like, oh, you dropped it in a pool? We don't cover that. It covers accidental damage, water damage, and any sort of technical malfunction. So,
you know what? We should do a bit here on the program where I, like, smash my phone with a hammer and then send it in. We should do...
Sort of like
some good radio.
A performance art kind of piece.
Yeah, performance art piece.
See, Brian told me about how he listened to this podcast, and he and his wife moved from Wisconsin to Pennsylvania, I think, last summer, and they binge listened to the Happy Rant, which made me question his sanity, but I also really appreciated him. So
I'm not sure.
I mean, we were great company the whole way. I'm not sure that that smashing the phone on the podcast would go over so well because he might find out about it.
That's true.
Well, guys, we've got a big segment coming up. This is something that we literally have been planning and orchestrating for months, arranging details. A lot of paper. There's been a lot of paperwork involved. Ted, you've been intricately involved in this process. We are very pleased to have, for the first time ever, on the podcast, a friend of ours, a mentor, a guide. The author of Mega, what's the title, Ted, again?
Nice research, Stephen. The book is called, the book's called Mega.
I do as much research as you do.
Well, I know the title of the book, so I'll share that now. It's called Mega, Get Noticed All the Time for Everything by Chaz Marriott. And it was the first title that I acquired at Gut Check Press, kind of outside the Gut Check family, as it were. So Zach and I were really excited to bring Chaz on board, and the book, if you're not familiar, is a business book. So it's a book on business, a book on leadership, and it's sort of in the vein of Michael Hyatt's book Platform. So it's really how to get more people to like you
and give you money
exactly. So it was an important book, and I have to say, this is kind of strange. I mean, it's sort of for me like worlds colliding here on the program with my dear friend Chaz. In studio with two acquaintances. So,
Chaz, you know. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Stevie, Bubby, Booby, Buddy, how you doing, man? It's good to be on here on the Happy Rant with my buds, Barnabas, son of the great Bill Hybels, and just wonderful. And that other guy that was just talking, wonderful. Good to be here, guys.
Now, Chaz, if you could just give
Chaz,
us
missed some.
Chaz, if you could just give us a little, you know, update on what you've been doing. I mean, there have been rumors on Gawker and on, you know, People magazine as another one, some involving Kardashians. So what's been going on lately?
What am I doing? I'm sitting in my beautiful timeshare in suburban Orlando right now, reframing my best practices for core competencies. There's a lot going on right now. I own a legitimate New York publishing house. We give advances. I'll acquire all your books right now. I don't care. Listen.
Are you snorting cocaine as we speak?
Chaz, what does that look like logistically for you to acquire our book manuscripts? This is interesting for us, and I'm sure it's going to be interesting for our readers. What would that
look like? Do you have any cereal?
not on me, not here in the studio.
I don't want to talk deals then. I want to talk marketing. I want to talk publicity. I want to talk all this sort of stuff. Target demo. Do you see what I just did right there? That was a subheading. I'm doing subheadings now in conversations.
Nice.
Subheadings are so important, and people don't do them while they're talking because people, write this down, are stupid. Target demo. Target demo is what you want to be thinking about, and three of you are horrible at it.
Now, Chaz, I don't know if you knew this, but Barnabas works in marketing. Maybe you guys can share some best practices here today on the program.
My best practices are reframing as we speak, so I can't do that. But listen, I don't know, Barnabas, do you know what target demo means?
I do know what target demo means, and I also know that the majority of target demo doesn't take kindly to being called stupid. Generally speaking, at the risk of contradicting the one with a higher profile on a larger platform. That just struck me as a little bit odd.
Okay, let me back up just a little bit. All right, so both Barnabas and Chaz, let's say I have a book manuscript and I really want to promote it. I'd like to compare the differences between how the two of you would promote a book manuscript. So, Chaz, let's say I'm bringing a book to you and I want it to go big. What would you do?
You want to identify your target demo. Target demo is industry speak. It's short for something. I don't know what it's short. I don't think anyone knows what it's short for. But you want to find these people. You want to find out what connects with them. Is it a Christian book?
For the sake of example, yes.
All right, then you're trying to sell it to women, middle-aged
also,
women.
Yes, in general.
That's your target demo. I want you to think meditation, pictures of you doing yoga, pictures of you holding a baby with no shirt on, pictures of you doing soul kegels. I want you to think, how do you make yourself seem more womanly to your target demo? Your target demo is, listen, this is not, and I didn't mean to call him stupid earlier, Barney Booby. Your target demo are the people. When your family tells you you have to choose between your life of marketing and self-promotion and them, your target demo becomes like a new family. Hang on a minute. I gotta mute you guys just a second. I'm back.
Chaz?
Now, your target demo. Yeah, Ted.
Is there any such thing as... would you say anybody here in the studio has done too much marketing? Has anybody, kind of reached a sad level of self-promotion?
A saturation point, to use some industry speak.
Yeah.
Impossible. You know who does the best marketing I've ever seen? Ted Strongbow. He took prayer and he turned it into a patent-pending,
brand
cash
identity.
Cow.
Yeah,
that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Listen, you tell people, it's not what I want. It's what I can give you. I.e., I'm your white knight.
I can give them to you.
Well, Chaz, I have a question for you. Some of the most successful book sales out there, the design of them features usually a man in a suit, usually the author, and just his face prominently on the cover. Say in Joel Osteen's case, he's smiling. In T.D. Jakes' case, he's looking rather. Maybe
malicious.
Lordly is the right word. Yes. Did you say delicious or malicious?
I said
delicious. Okay. Most. Perfect. Yes.
Delicious and malicious.
Is that, how does that reach target demo? Is that an effective way of reaching said target demo?
It's effective, but it's not the most effective. What they need to do is zoom out and get their wives in. In Osteen's case, he's smart because his wife has crazy eyes. But you want to get your wife involved in the pictorials. And write this down. Does everyone have a pen? Your wife needs to look like Bo Derek if Bo Derek were dressed in a very conservative sweater. Gabish.
Gabish. Chaz, what would you say is the value of family? I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to start implementing some of this in my book marketing. But what we say is the value.
Are you going to marry a Bo Derek lookalike?
I'm already married to a Bo Derek lookalike.
I mean, I haven't met your wife, so I didn't mean to insult. I'm sure she's a lovely lady.
You know, that was the first thing. That was my only criteria. I mean,
working out for you. That works. That's good. Yeah.
On your Match.com profile, that was the only thing you checked.
Well, because I was thinking about my career.
Right.
You know, nothing comes before career.
Right. You intuitively followed Chaz's piece of advice. That's really savvy.
Okay, so Chaz, family, as Ted was saying, family.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't ever have my son Snake on any of my marketing materials at all, although he is a valued member of my team. But I don't recommend getting – you don't want people to think that you have a life outside of marketing. That's what you want to avoid. I want you to focus instead on the whiteness of your teeth, the Bo Derek-iness of your wife, and your hair. Your hair is important. I believe, listen, have you heard of my Chazronyms? They're words where you take the first letter of each of the word, and each of those letters has another word nesting inside of it, and an important one is the word hair, having aggressive, intentional resources. My hair is enormous, and that's how I know I'm a successful promoter.
Chaz, give us a couple of more Chazronyms, if you would. I'm really interested in this concept.
Chazronyms. Let's see. How about this one? Seagal, seeing everything going away lately. I live with martial artist Steven Seagal above a karate dojo. Does that mean that I'm not a sought-after expert in social marketing? No.
In what context would you use the acronym, the chazronym Seagal?
If you asked me, you know, what's been the trajectory of my personal life lately?
it's very Seagal.
Very Seagal.
Seeing everything going away lately.
It's always darkest before the dawn, and it is dark, my friend. The dawn is coming.
Now, I did want to ask you, you've lived the high life, you know, you're very successful. What do you do when you're not marketing, when you're not promoting? I mean, what's your life? What can we aspire to? What can we look forward to in terms of our lives?
If you are doing anything that's not marketing, you can't look forward to having any kind of a life. Your whole existence is marketing. That's the kind of thing I keep telling people. Now, for example, I was getting a sub sandwich at Subway. Subway is a kind of a regional restaurant we have down here in suburban Orlando where you can get sandwiches, hoagie sandwiches.
It's a little neighborhood sandwich shop.
Yeah. And there was a local Cuban joint.
Yeah.
There was a Cuban man there. And because they have Cuban sandwiches there. And when he turned around and he said, "Aren't you Chaz Marriott?" And I said, "Yes, who are you?" And he told me who he was. You know who he was?
Fidel Castro.
Who?
You know what? Listen, racism is a disease. Cuban racism is a problem. And you guys sit there high and mighty thinking that you're above it, but you're not. You know who it was? I have no idea because they all look the same to me. But he told me he worked in the TV industry. And then I proceeded in line at the sandwich shop to pitch to him my spec screenplay for a pilot for a television series about two men who live together above a karate dojo. And I call it Friends, and I think it's going to be the next big thing.
Mm. I like that. I like it a lot. Well, Chaz, before you go, let's say that there's, you know, some young kids listening, and they want to know how can they make it? How can they break through barriers, accomplish great things? You know, I'm talking teens, high school. What advice would you give them?
Hang on a minute. That's my agent.
Okay.
Booby, I'm on a podcast. Got to let you go. Young people was the question. Kids, young kids. Listen, everything is changing. Change is the only constant. That's something that I coined. When people say that, they have to pay me a nickel. The world is changing. 10 years ago, nuclear was the preferred waste. You could dump it anywhere. Now everybody's a detective. You see what I mean? If you want to be a successful self-promoter, you need to immerse yourself in self-promotion. You need to become a method actor, if you will. And listen, Booby, listen to my podcasts, Business and All That Chaz. If you listen to them, you will glean wisdom. And in gleaning wisdom, you will learn how to take things about yourself that are unique, things about yourself that set you apart, things that are maybe aspects of your personality that are, they make you a human being. They involve being, open and willing to interact. You just shove them all down deep. You shove them down, and then you poop them out, and then you forget them. And you yourself have to become kind of a vapid, two-dimensional caricature, if you will. Steven, you're pretty good at this. You see how you, in order to make money, in order to
Steven's all about making money. We just heard about
it. I am.
Off the air.
I am.
And he does excel at vapid.
That's I am. True. I
yes.
do.
Yes. Ted, you're not very good at this, but you have great hair, so that's all right. Barnabas, thanks. I heard that people were talking about you, how you look like a JCPenney's mannequin, and that's good. You all have to have one thing about yourself that's unique, and then all the rest needs to be kind of a mean, if you will. Add up everybody in the JCPenney's catalog, divide by the number of people, and that's who you need to be, an androgynous, characteristic-less self-promoting machine. A self-aware, self-promoting machine. Capiche? Listen, one more piece of advice I have for you. You want to be successful. You remember this. A, B, C. Always be concerned. Concerned with what? Concerned with closing. ABC. Write that down. Get a tattoo. Always be concerned. And you will be successful if you live that, if you think on that, if you breathe that, eat and sleep. Always be concerned with closing, and you will be successful.
Chaz, we appreciate your time. We know that you're busy. We know that you and Steven Seagal have a lot going on. You've got a pilot in the works.
Not true. No, he's just eating top ramen all day long.
Well, we appreciate your time, and we aspire to be like you, and we look up to you. So thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, anytime, guys. Anytime. And hey, if you have any kind of work you need done, and I'm not just talking about social media. I mean, around the house or, you know, leaves, gutters to be cleaned out, anything. You know where to find me.
Thanks. Thanks, Chaz. Appreciate it.
Peace out.
That interview was groundbreaking, and you'll probably want to go back and listen to that several times. We're going to move on from that. We're going to move on to a subject. Ted, this week you wrote a piece that we featured on the site, The Blazing Center. It was a great piece. A lot of people liked it.
Excellent product placement, by the way. Chaz would be proud.
Yeah, DraftKings. ESPN paid me to say that. It was about DraftKings and FanDuel, and it got a good response. So, Ted, what was the article about? What was your main point there?
Yeah, I mean, if you watch any football, if you've watched any football this fall, you've been, you know, barraged with these, they call them one-week fantasy sites, where it's essentially kind of legalized gambling for the rest of America that isn't Las Vegas. But it's a way to wager money on pro football. And these companies, FanDuel and DraftKings, have been advertising so much, it feels like you sort of watch hours on end of these ads with a little bit of football sprinkled in.
It's like being waterboarded with these commercials.
Dude, it really is. Yeah, I mean, you're punished for watching pro football for having to sit through these ads. But yeah, I watched, I think it was a Thursday night game a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't sleep that night. And I had this essay kind of rattling around about not only the ads, but the kind of guy that they use in the ads. You know, just being this kind of sharky, young male who's supposed to look essentially like us, you know, kind of very ordinary looking, and that's the point, you know.
Speak for yourself.
Well, yeah. Apparently, you look like a JCPenney's mannequin.
Yeah, I'm putting that on my business cards.
Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely. But no, the essay came out of that, and just kind of how I guess I saw the unredeemed version of myself in these guys and these ads, and really how chilling it is. You know, you watch hour after hour of those advertisements, and you really see, you know, what life could be like without Christ.
You mean like pouring yourself into FanDuel, DraftKings, that kind of thing?
I think you about said gambling, and I think that's probably a pretty fair term for those sites. I'm not. I love fantasy football as a game, and I think you know, playing in leagues for money with friends or something is one thing, but like, those leagues are, it's a casino. They are advertising a casino. The guy who's like, well, I brought in $39 and I've won $1.2 million. See, he's the only one in the universe who's done that, but that's the draw, and it's exactly how casinos market. I mean, it is a gambling platform.
Now, Barnabas, would you ever do something like DraftKings, FanDuel, something like that?
Prior to this year, I would have said no, but only because of time. Now I look at it and I go, I'm just waiting for the stories to come out of the people who have subverted somebody who had just escaped a gambling problem. Mm. And now they got into these sites and they're sucked back in. How somebody lost their home, how somebody lost their job. I mean, this strikes me as the kind of thing that's really, really risky and dangerous. Yeah. And one of Ted's points in the article was how they give this illusion that it's the everyman. So you look at these guys and you're like, oh, that's not a J. Crew model who's doing this. It's not somebody so different than me. That's a guy who lives in the apartment next door, and he won $40,000, so I can do the same thing. And it seems the whole thing gives off a vibe of being really devious.
You know what feels interesting to me too, that to me feels a little bit different than like gambling on slot machines or something like that, is it does feel like it appeals somewhat to your knowledge of football. Like, if you're good enough, it's not pure luck. And I'm not saying that this is the reality, but it's almost like if you're good enough and you know enough about football and you can pick the right players, then you're going to win money. And it's just like, oh, well, I can do that. I mean, this isn't just a slot machine. This is like, this is something I can actually do. Do you guys get that vibe at all?
Totally. I think it appeals to the male ego, you know. Yes. And all sports gambling does that. And the times that I've been in Vegas and have been sort of, you know, tempted to gamble on sports or have even put a few dollars on sports, it's very much that. It's like, well, I played football and I coach, so I know more about this, therefore I'm going to win, which is ridiculous, you know. But I think they're definitely catering to that mentality, and it's a very kind of insidious and smart way to rope people in.
The other thing, I saw an article that said that showed how the winnings broke down, and it was something like 2% of players won 90% of the money. And so it is the classic sharks and minnows kind of thing. There are gamblers who know how to beat casinos. They're not allowed to go to most casinos anymore. But it's the same with this game. Like, there are people who figure out how to be career winners at these things. But for the average person loses money or doesn't really win anything. And I think, like most things involving betting and gambling, if you do this with limits on yourself, both in terms of the time spent and the money put into it, and you don't have a gambling problem, there's probably nothing inherently wrong with it. I just think that it's something that people look at as something other than gambling that will suck people into those habits and that mindset because of what you said, Stephen, in terms of playing on the ego and giving the illusion of being a skill game and what is really still ultimately a game of chance.
Now, Ted, do you think, I guess let me just ask a bit of a broader question. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like gambling would be wrong? Like, if someone said to you, is it okay to gamble on sports? How would you answer that question?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think I could say with some certainty that in almost every case, it would be unwise. I don't know if it's morally wrong, but I think it's just unwise. You know, it's probably from a stewardship standpoint wrong. In part because if you win, you're going to want to do it again.
Yeah.
And if you lose, you have to wake up with that horrible feeling of I put something out there and I got nothing in return.
Right.
And I think that's the worst kind of Vegas-y feeling of, you know, whether it's playing a slot machine or playing a hand of blackjack or betting on a football game and losing and walking away with nothing. It's just the worst feeling, you know?
And I think, and the danger of that is if you're a competitive person, that's not tolerable to you. So you have to go back and make up for what you lost. So it's you go double or nothing, triple or nothing, and then you have three times less than you did before if you don't win. And so that empty feeling leads to going back to try to fill it up from the same well again and again and again.
Right.
And it seems like, and tell me if you guys agree with this, but it seems like in terms of earning money, like when you look at earning money, it's not a biblically full of integrity model of earning money. It's like, I won it by chance. It's not I worked hard. It's not that I toiled or I labored or I built something. It's that I risked money and I got money in return.
Dude, did you guys happen to catch that Netflix documentary about the Christian card counters in Vegas?
I saw about it, but I never actually watched it.
That
it's
sounds
really
fascinating.
Yeah, it was great. It was actually really, really well done. That company, I think, did two documentaries. One was about
Fight Church too. Did you watch Fight
Church?
They
did Fight Church, which was really boring. I thought that was, you know, not nearly as good. But the Vegas one was really interesting, and it had some big characters, and really the most interesting thing about it, I think, was their justification of, you know, why this is a legitimate way to make money, because it's kind of, you know, sticking it to casinos. And
it was like Robin Hood, right? Like steal from the rich, give to the poor, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, in true human fashion, I mean, the first person you always convince is yourself, you know. And they were truly convinced that they were doing the Lord's work and it was noble. And but yeah, there was still kind of something slimy and dirtbaggy about it. So
that just sounds like the same reasoning that people use to go on like jihads or crusades. I'm doing the Lord's work by hurting other people.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's not real solid reasoning.
Well, and I think the movie illustrated that you kind of have to plunge so deep into the darkness that you know, whatever good you're doing, like whatever, you know, few thousand dollars you're taking the casino for kind of isn't worth the sort of cosmic damage that you're doing to yourself by having to, like, you know, put on a disguise and skulk around in casinos all night.
Yeah, I guess to me, in terms of, like, upstanding ways to earn a living, God's given people gifts and talents. And yes, one of those can be mathematical skills that can be aimed at counting cards, for example, or putting together statistical models that help you figure out who's most likely to do well in any given fantasy football matchup if you want to game that system. But there are ways to do that that actually benefit other people instead of leeching off of other losers to make your own money. Every skill can be put to a positive advantage. I mean, even if you're working in, say, an entertainment field, you're still doing something that's creating a product. All you're doing if you're winning at gambling is taking somebody else's losses and pocketing them. That is the only thing that is happening. You benefit yourself and no one else. It does strike me as an immoral way to make a living.
There was a really fascinating article in Wired about guys, and I kind of couldn't believe this, but guys who make a living by winning games at Dave and Buster's.
What?
Yeah, they know the secret tricks to getting, like, incredible, like, thousands and thousands of tickets from these particular games, which they then trade in for, like, a PlayStation or an Xbox or an iPad, which they then sell on eBay. And I think one guy was making like $50,000 a year doing this.
Wow.
Yeah, he would go in, and there's like this underground culture of figuring out the glitches in these games, exploiting them, getting thousands of tickets. And it was a great article, really interesting.
That sounds profoundly sad to me, because I think the question that I would want to ask would be, so you're taking this, like, essentially fun thing, which is playing games at a fun place, and you're making it into a job, which kind of, by definition, makes it not fun anymore. I'd want to ask if it's not fun anymore. Did the article touch on that at all?
It seemed like the guys, I'll try and remember to send it to you. It seemed like the guys still kind of got, like, almost like a gambling rush out of it. Because it was like, you know, sort of that instant gratification thing going on. But I don't know. It didn't specifically ask, like, is it fun anymore? Mm-hmm. So it was, I don't know. It's just, to me, doesn't that sound like kind of a, like, also just like a really sad, sort of boring way to make a living? Like, living in Dave and Buster's. Like, I can't think of a worse place to live. Like, I hate that place.
Yes. I mean, it's Dave and Buster's is just like Chuck E. Cheese for adults.
Yeah,
or Circus Pizza, or whatever it is in your area of the country.
Chuck E. Cheese down here. We took my daughter to Chuck E. Cheese for her birthday, and that's about all I could handle. One time per year.
Yeah.
Chuck E. Cheese. Let's talk about another interesting storyline going on. So the Cubs just got swept by the Mets. And Ted, Ted, you were mentioning the storyline of sort of needing losers. Were you saying in sports or in life?
Well, I just think it gives something for people to identify with. And the reason I thought of it was in light of the movie Back to the Future 2, which, you know, granted is you know, kind of a hard thing to talk about. And I wouldn't begin to know how to introduce that. But I think, you know, in Back to the Future 2, there was this storyline where they went to right now, basically. And the Cubs were in the World Series, which the joke was, you know, haha, the Cubs are so bad for so long, they'll never get there. And here we are with them not getting there. And I think people have become so kind of comfortable with the Cubs as losers, it would be somewhat mind-blowing for a perennial loser like that to have actually won a World Series. So it's, you know, the morning after them getting swept, I find myself kind of being relieved that they lost. You know what I mean?
Because it's like, it's sort of the in the fabric of your universe. And if they win, it almost like disrupts the fabric of what you know to be true and how the world works.
Here's the thing. Like, if they win, so in 2004, the Red Sox won the World Series for the first time since, what, I think 1908?
Yeah.
Something like that. And it was this amazing thing. Now, granted, they had the huge comeback against the Yankees and all this stuff. But they no longer matter as a baseball team.
It's true.
Right? The up until that point, every time they would get near the postseason, there was this massive story and interest of, is this going to be the year? No, let's go show highlights of Bill Buckner letting the ball bounce through his legs and all this stuff. And now they don't matter because their identity is now just, oh, they're a baseball team in a fairly large market, and maybe they'll be competitive or maybe they won't. And that's exactly what will happen to the Cubs should they ever win the World Series. They will stop mattering.
So do you think we need basically perennial losers?
I do.
I think they make for better stories.
They make for better stories. They give you someone to root for, but they also sort of underscore, I think, the idea that most people are perennial losers. And I don't mean that in a kind of, you know, downgrading way toward most people, but I think most of us can relate more to mm-hmm. not living our dreams than living our dreams. You know what I mean? And I think the existence of teams like the Cubs, it sort of makes them more winsome. It makes them more likable, and not to mention all those like North Siders would become even more insufferable if the Cubs actually did win a World Series.
As a former Chicago area resident, I can heartily agree with that. I think what Ted just said about relating to losers is spot on, because sports is about the only thing in life where there's only one successful entity at the end of a season. Mm. One successful team, one successful player, one successful competitor. In every other area of life, lots of people can be successful. The Cubs had an amazing year. They won 97 games. They were the third best team in their division by record, but 97 games is an insanely successful baseball season. And they're still losers in the sports world because they're not the one team left standing. In the rest of life, you can take great satisfaction in having success without ever having to be the best. Now, you strive to be the best, you strive to fulfill your dreams, whatever it is. But there is, it's a weird thing to call a team that won 97 games and exceeded expectations a losing team.
Well, let me flip the tables a little bit. Do you guys think that, like, for example, do you think that one of the reasons, like, the Patriots are so despised is, I mean, obviously they've got all the surrounding things like cheating and Deflategate and Spygate going on. But it seems to me like one of the reasons I hate the Patriots is because they always win. And
same with the Yankees for like 15 years, from the mid-90s up through, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, and so do you think, and to your point, Ted, do you think that part of it is like, I can't relate to people that always win. I can't relate to Tom Brady, who always wins the Super Bowl. And so, therefore, I dislike him.
You know, I think it was easier to hate the Yankees for all those years because they had a bigger budget. You know what I mean? Yes. It was sort of like hating the rich kid at school because
they were playing by different rules.
They were playing by different rules.
They were buying their championships almost.
They were buying their championship because why wouldn't they? You know, they had the resources to do that. You know, I think with New England, for me, I actually find them fascinating, and I like them because of how they've been able to stay, you know, consistently successful in a league that's designed for parity. You know, the league is designed for bad teams to get good every few years and for good teams to become bad. And New England has just stayed good, and I think that's really admirable and interesting. So I have a harder time hating the Patriots than I would like a New York Yankees.
For me, the Patriots, oh man, they're just, I feel like they're just, I feel like they want me to hate them. Like Brady,
yes, they do.
Brady is,
they
just
absolutely,
like,
love being hated. It is the fuel that drives them. They love being hated.
It's a different kind of, like, it was the same with the Ravens a couple years ago. The Ravens were more like a thuggish, we want you to hate us. Mm-hmm. The Patriots are almost like a smug, like,
they're the country
rich,
club.
Like country club, rich guy, like Tom Brady married to the model, we want you to hate us kind of thing.
Bob Kraft wears those stupid white collar shirts. Ugh.
Those are the
very
worst.
Different shirt, Bob.
Those are kind of gangster, except he doesn't have a gangster face at all. You know?
he looks like William Shatner. No, I wrote an article maybe last year during the last really successful Patriots run. Well, I guess that's been going on since 2001 at this point, but about how villains are really good for sports because they're really good for anything that needs tension and narrative to thrive. A movie without a bad guy is a boring movie, or without tension of some kind. But villains create tension, and they are the best villain the NFL has seen since, I don't know, like the Packers in Paul Hornung's day or something, like that. Vince Lombardi. I mean, they beat everybody, and they do it year in and year out, and it's fantastic as a fan, because love them or hate them, you need them. And I think losers are the same way. So love them or hate them, you kind of need them, because they create – they're sort of an – and the Cubs are unique, because they're the lovable losers, not just – they're not the, you know, the Los Angeles Clippers of Donald Sterling's day or something like that.
They're not the, like, they're not the laughable losers.
They're not the ugh. They're just embarrassing to everybody. It's like slapstick.
And it's interesting now that the Ravens are really bad this year. Terrell Suggs is out. Ray Lewis is gone. Ed Reed's gone. All the sort of gangster guys are gone.
All the scary guys are gone.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's not nearly, to me, as much tension in the AFC North. Like, with the Bengals atop the league, it's like the Bengals. I mean, Andy Dalton is the quarterback.
Yeah, it's like the baby brother who just sort of shot up, and he's 6 inches taller than all of his siblings. And you kind of go, oh, well, where'd that guy come from? It's just this weird sort of upstart.
Yeah, and Andy Dalton feels to me like the classic, like, maybe I don't know enough about him, but he's like a middle America kind of guy. He just kind of clean, upstanding, doesn't get into trouble.
You just say that because he looks completely Irish.
Dude, don't we feel that way about all redheaded men, though? Isn't that strange? They all look kind of boyish and sort of out of place. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, there's
a toddler in a suit.
Yeah, they're like, they should all wear Kiss Me, I'm Irish shirts, and they sort of have a touch of a leprechaun-y sort of charm to them.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny. Well, that's
horrible people.
All of our redheaded male listeners are either really insulted or really, really complimented right now.
Yeah.
You're a horrible person. I don't feel that way about Irish people.
Well, I didn't say about Irish people. I said about redheaded men.
I don't feel that way about redheaded Irish people.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Just the AFC North has a very, non-dramatic feel this year. Mm-hmm. And because there's no, you're right, there's sort of like no villain in the division.
Dude, which begs the question, what's the new Smash Mouth division in pro football, and is there one?
I don't know. Do you think there is one?
I don't know. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
NFC West. Although with the Seahawks down this year, it's a little bit less so. But they have the Cardinals, the Niners, who have been good every year except this year, the Seahawks, and now the Rams, who have a killer defense and a running back who looks like he's the next Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, but like none of those teams are doing it. Like the Cardinals just got beat by the Steelers. The 49ers are down, the Seahawks are down, and the Rams aren't that great.
Let's be fair. The AFC North hasn't done it for a few years either, because the Steelers haven't had a good defense since they won the Super Bowl. The Bengals are okay, and the Ravens are about the only real decent team in that division, and the Browns are they're the laughable losers.
They are.
That was a reputation that lasted longer than the reality.
Yeah, I would say they have. That's true, except this year it's sort of turned around again with the Bengals are atop the North. Steelers are doing well. It's sort of, I feel like the division is turning again.
Oh, Landry Jones.
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't have that brutal, like,
it doesn't.
Up kind of connotation.
It doesn't. You're right.
Although, will that ever happen in the NFL again, considering that nobody's allowed to hit anymore?
Dude, that's a really good question, man. I don't know. We may have seen the last of that.
It's turning into flag football.
Mm. I mean, it's still tackle football, but like those hits that would, you know, Hines Ward would have gotten kicked out of half the games he played in if he played today, because every single crackback block would have been flagged, and the tugging on the face mask. I mean, all of that, just those tough, dirty guys, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, those guys,
Remember when we were kids and the NFL used to put out like the VHS tapes called Crunch Course, and it was a full hour of people just getting concussed, people getting
brutal. Yeah,
it was amazing.
I know. If they sold those again now, people our age and older would buy them by the bushel.
They're like collector's item. They'd be like a collector's item.
They're amazing. I have a few.
The VHS NFL's greatest hits.
Yep.
Well, folks, we've wandered too and far on the podcast. We are thankful to Chaz Marriott for dropping by. Thanks for listening. As always, we are grateful for your reviews on iTunes. Go to iTunes, one click, leave a review. If you write a review, there's a good chance we'll read it on the air. Only if it's fawning and positive.
Or acidically negative.
Yeah, a one star. We like one star acidic negative reviews. Thanks to Lem Street Mobile for being the sponsor. If you go to Lem Street Mobile, you can get a great deal. Barnabas, what's the deal on that again?
So lemstreet.com, you can get a protection plan that it's a no-term contract, $5 a month with a $69 deductible to repair any broken phone. Use the code HAPPYRANT at checkout, and you'll get a 10% discount on that and a 10% uptick in value on any trade-ins you send in. So lemstreet.com, and the code is HAPPYRANT when you check out, and it's less than half the price of the protection plans you get through most of your service providers.
Do it,
also,
folks.
You'll get 10% taller. I did it, and I'm almost 6'5 now. So there's that.
And you can dunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get 10% awesomer.
Exactly.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Until next time, peace the heck out.
Life Audio presents Bridges with Monica Schmelter.
That we have an enduring hope that can't be taken away when we are in Christ. And to know that we have that, right? And eternal salvation, because this world can be so busy and so dark that we can forget that.
Right.
Because sometimes I get caught in the trappings of what's going on in my life this moment. And while I have to recognize that, that's not it.
Continue listening on lifeaudio.com or wherever you find your podcast.